Happy Monday, everybody. This is IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Next to me, Eric Nalin. Down low, Coach Dub. Today, we are going to discuss the hardest working Longhorns. We'll do some recruiting stuff, too. And Texas is putting DKR to use, having a fancy people event with some good entertainment, but fundraising, importantly. We know the success of Oklahoma State, I believe, had their kind of concert thing a couple months ago, and they had a lot of success. So that's becoming like a new thing. I think Texas did it last year, but it is fun that they're doing these big events inside the stadiums kind of around college football now. It's pretty neat. Roaster, good morning, man. Saw you on the board as well this morning. All right. The hardest workers, aka a proxy for who is bringing the culture to work with them. And these normally almost always translate onto the field as well. All right. In a shock to nobody, Michael Taft, Eric, explain that. I just don't get that.
Yeah, it's funny. He is the stereotype, but then he's also a really good football player too. That's kind of, you know, been the thing since he got to campus. He was never really considered a walk-on by his peers. But he's also had that gritty blue-collar attitude you associate with a walk-on. Yeah, just like it says in here, he'll do anything to gain an edge, you know, extra time in the weight room, extra time in the film room, you know, trying to consume as many calories as possible, trying to put on good weight. He'll do anything he can to improve.
I was rewatching the videos they do on the facilities. You know, they tour facilities when they were showing our kind of cafeteria style again. I don't know how you can't get up to 350 if you want to real quick. I mean, like, yeah. The situations there, it's incredible.
You'd be surprised, man. Some kids just don't want to eat. It's like, yo,
I know.
You'll miss it once you're gone, I promise you.
You go to the nutrition staff of 8 people, tell them what your diet wants to be, and they'll make sure you have breakfast, lunch, and they're like, oh, and then we send them home pre-made dinners if they want. I'm like,
come on. Yeah, they don't lack for anything. It's you know, some guys are just hard gainers. Taff is a bit of a hard gainer. You know, Maurice Blackwell was a hard gainer. Some of them just need a little bit of time. I still think Taft's best football is probably going to be in the NFL once he finally gets over, you know, 205 pounds or whatever. He's still got a ways to go to get there.
Yeah, for sure. Next up, love to hear this for the linebacker room, Anthony Hill and Leon Golifau.
Yeah, you know, it's a cerebral position. It's a complex position to play. They've got to watch film. And Anthony Hill was, you know, we heard this about Anthony Hill when he was a true freshman. So this isn't something that he just, you know, picked up in college. He kind of came in this way, basically treats it like a job. It was good to hear about Leon Golifau. I'm not sure that I'd heard that to that degree of him before. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. You know, he's playing a cerebral position too. A lot of conflict those guys are put in. They have to diagnose it, understand tendencies. And it's good to hear. Yeah, we're hearing about all the right positions, right? Safety, you got to be super smart. Taff, linebacker, and then we're going to hear about it, the quarterback, here in a second.
Yeah, we'd always hear from Leonga, you know, sources early being like, we love him in pass coverage or whatever. It was always kind of tied to something physical. So that's an important add that he's figuring it out as well to match the physicality.
Yeah. Yeah. The linebacker is a tough guy too. So he's got a whole lot of good stuff going on. Tough, watching film, has the physical traits. So that's why we've been really high on him. We saw good flashes of him last year. Some learning curve there. But yeah, I expect a big year out of LaFalle.
Yeah, I like the idea of a non-tough Polynesian. I don't think that exists. I think culturally they kind of guarantee.
Those are the volleyball players is what they say.
Yeah, those volleyball players are no joke. I went to school with a Samoan kid that was like 6'4", and he would get down at the volleyball courts. That's crazy athleticism too.
Always.
Arch Manning.
Yeah, Arch. I mean, come on. There's some stereotypes going on with Mannings, and he lives up to those too. He's a smart football player, but he watches a lot of film. He takes football very seriously. Fun guy off the field, but very serious when it comes to getting better, putting in the work. You know, I think he and Taft watch film together just so they can get inside each other's head. What's the quarterback thinking here? What's the safety thinking in this situation? That sort of stuff. You know, obviously they've been friends since Arch was being recruited. So, you know, it makes sense that they would help make each other better, make the team better.
Yeah, hanging out at the frat house, man. Just really, really bonding.
There are worse places to convene.
Yeah, exactly. Very gentlemanly. I'm scouring Mississippi State all 22 and just watching Arch repeatedly to really try to get a feel for him. And he's shown a lot of intelligence. Like one of the first plays against Mississippi State, he goes through his progressions. To his third guy, and that just doesn't happen if you're not putting in the work off the field.
Yeah, you know, Milwee was working with him a lot throughout his recruitment. You know, Texas kind of knew they were going to get him. And Milwee was always blown away by how advanced he was on reading, you know, making the right reads on the chalkboard, where to go, you know, given this look, where to go, given that look. And it's, you know, it's just been a carryover for college. And you can see it on his play. He made plays that veterans don't make in his second. You know, that's kind of a, he's just way ahead of the curve. And that's, you know, right in line with his last name. He lives up to that stereotypical Manning aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Where he separates from that stereotype is that he's much more mobile.
Well, they adopted his offense into high school too at Isidore Newman. They basically did an all gas, no break style of offense too. So to have those reps in high school with that as well, you can see that's going to pay dividends.
Yeah. When Justin came back from one of his trips to New Orleans and said, you know, they're using all the Texas terminology now. I was like, this one's over, man. We know this is over.
Yeah. That's a huge part. Coach, anything to say about?
Yeah. Ty Mache has a special coming out on him. You know, they did a film review on Arch when he first started the game versus UTSA, then how he kind of advanced when he got to Mississippi State, the reads he was making, the throws he was making. Like, just unbelievable, the growth in the amount of games that he played in, right, from the start to, you know, to when he finished before Quinn came back. So it's just impressive to see. Talk about his physical traits. He can do some things his uncles couldn't do with the flick of the wrist, just, you know, rolling out to the left and just letting it go, that bomb to Wingo. So I can't wait to see the growth when he takes over as a full starter, man. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I try to watch. Go ahead.
A little goes a long way with Arch. You know, like he would learn in one game what most guys might learn in half a season.
I would try to temper I go to film to try to temper expectations and chill out. That's not what happens when I watch Arch's film every single time. And not even – I'm not talking about throwing bombs. I'm talking about quarterbacking. Like, I'm like, man, this kid's really advanced. It makes sense where he's from, but it's – I get more excited to where I have to not go on the live and be like, guys, I think he's going to be really, really, really good. All right. Manny Muhammad. This is also not surprising, right? This has kind of just been the mindset. And the Muhammad family, you know, they get after it.
Yeah, they're business-minded, very business-minded people. And, you know, everybody thinks being motivated by money can be bad. It can also be very good. It can drive you towards greatness. He's been motivated to be a pro since he was in high school. He was even eating right, training, doing all the stuff that pros do. He had a lot of good people to learn from at South Oak Cliff. Shout out to my guy, Kyle Ward. And he's got a lot of experience with family in college football. He's got a lot of, you know, cousins that have played all over. It's just really been a football family. It's a good incubator to be in. He's got the business acumen side of it. You know, that when it's NIL negotiations, that might be a little touch and go at times, but never doubt the fact that he's trying to ball out and he's worried about becoming a great, great football player, not just a great college player. He's never one that you'd have to worry about. Oh, you got a payday. He's going to quit. Nah, he's looking for the next payday too. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah. It's part of being a pro.
Right.
Yeah. We're not doing this just for the goodness of our heart. It's a business. All right. Another one that's important too, Trevor Goosby, a young hard worker.
Yeah, that's, you know, he had like a cult following on IT before he was offered. He was committed to TCU, I think. And, you know, we liked him. He liked the size and athleticism. We, you know, we love the basketball traits. So he had a big following. We're kind of counting down the days. When's Flood going to offer this guy? So we really liked the athletic profile, the size profile. But once he got to campus, I learned a whole lot more about him at that point. And, you know, first words out were that this guy's getting after it in the weight room. And you're like, oh, shit, it's over with then. Because he's got the athleticism and all the other stuff. If he's going to work too, like extra work, not just going with the flow, he's going to be really damn good. And here we are.
And Sark let him in front of the media too. That's always a very important.
Yeah, mature kid. I mean, you know, it's a great family. You want his brother on the basketball team because you know that guy's going to come in too. Really, exactly what you're looking for. And you know, in the NIL era, he's able to capitalize. Happy for him. I think it's probably going to be one year starter and out because I think he's going to be that good.
How do you think leadership on the offensive line? Is it like a mix of Campbell, Hudson, Goosby? Do you know how the dynamics play out for the O-line guys?
Well, Campbell kind of took control throughout spring. We've seen it a lot. The guy goes from, you know, when he first got to campus, he only hung out with like the D linemen. He didn't really even hang out with the O-linemen. It's just, you know, it wasn't, I guess he felt more comfortable with the other side. And so now to see where he's at now, he's come a long way, but it's a, you know, tale as old as time that a guy comes in, needs to mature a little bit. And, you know, that's what development is. It's not just developing technique. It's developing them in the young men, young leaders. And, yeah, Campbell's kind of great, grabbed the reins. But, of course, Hudson is good in that regard, and Goosby as well. And Baker's a good, solid citizen. He's just young and doesn't have any skins on the wall. But, you know, one day maybe Baker's a leader too. He's got it in him.
Do you call him a good, solid citizen?
Yeah, like he does all.
No, I think it's good. I was just like, I've never heard that.
I assume he is off the field too, but in the program, he just does everything the right way. He's a good worker. Brandon Baker, I was kind of surprised wasn't mentioned here because we've heard that he's a worker as well. Let's throw Brandon Baker in there because we've heard that before.
Well, I'm glad to hear that about Baker.
It is, right? Need it.
We need it this year for sure. And then Jared Gibson.
Oh.
He's got all the muscles in the world, man.
Yeah, he does.
He's disciplined in the weight room. I know that.
I was exciting. I don't often get too excited to hear about guys doing Pilates, but this was one of those instances.
He needs it, man.
Yeah, he's so muscled up that, yeah. You know, and I think in here I use Trent Richardson as an example. Trent was a really stiff running back. I think that's what limited his feet. He was only great in college, or limited his career. He was only great in college because he had pretty good feet to make up for how stiff he was. But Jarek hasn't been that stiff. He's not that stiff somehow, and he looks like he should be. Because it almost looks like a young bodybuilder build. He's doing the right thing. He's getting very good advice, and he's smart to follow through on it. So I was happy to hear about that. That's a good development there.
Yeah, he's got that 1980s like build, like he's gonna work out on the beach in LA. He's just starting his career.
Young Sean Ray. He's got that build, but that's the perfect thing he can do for himself. You know, that was what some colleges were scared of Sam Ehlinger away because he had kind of a bulky, muscular build, and sometimes they think that'll limit you as a passer. Didn't really bother him in college, but it's something you always have to watch out. Everybody's got a different body, and you kind of have to give them a custom plan of approach to make sure that hit Cali Muscle. I wonder if he can do those muscle ups like old Cali Muscle. Jarek's a beast, and that shows some maturity. He's taking the right approach, or somebody gave him good advice. Something's going on there. Whatever it is, it's good.
We have another linebacker mentioned.
Yes.
What's going on here? This is Nansen's got their mind right, huh? So one who's after it in the weight room, Anthony Smith. Didn't he put on like 20 pounds when he like in like day two of being on campus last
year? Yeah, he put in about 15 pounds the first couple months on campus. You know, go back to his recruitment, and we heard a lot. We kind of predicted that flip to happen for a long time, and it never happened. And then it finally happened, of course. But we had always heard that he was a great fit for the program, great fit for that room, meaning that he can come in and get along and kind of follow what Anthony Hill was putting in place. And he's doing that. He's kind of making a name for himself as far as his hard work. One source goes, it's like the East Texas guys are different. You know, he said this guy works hard in the gym. Lance Jackson gets after it in the gym. Guy said Keaton Crawford, when he was here, went after it in the gym, which is no surprise. The last time you saw Keaton, he's talking about muscled up. These guys want to get out of East Texas, and the gym provides a good path to do that.
Is that what it is? Because that stereotype of East Texas seems true.
There's nothing in East Texas, man. You want to get out. You got to go make a name for yourself. You got to go do something because you don't want to go back to a town. They got one stoplight pretty much. And there's nothing there but a Dairy Queen. Right? You have to go make some of yourself, and that's the best way to do it.
Yeah. One of my best college sources of all time was on TCU staff for a long time. So he gave me some unique insight into what Gary Patterson would look for. He said on defense, we're looking for guys that are living in their car. Yeah, they want to get out of these bad circumstances. They're good people. They just need a chance, and they need the right work ethic. And if you find that, you know, they're going to tend to maximize. And lo and behold, you know, they did a lot of work in East Texas. They did a lot of work in Louisiana to find guys with that similar profile. TCU built defenses with guys like that, guys like Ty Anthony. And then the beautiful thing about Ty Anthony is he really understands it. You know, we mentioned Keaton Crawford a minute ago. He didn't process like you needed a safety to process. Ty Anthony processes like a linebacker. And him and Leonga might be the most natural all-around linebackers when you account for playing in coverage, reading and reacting. So sky's the limit for Ty Anthony. He's about 215, still needs to gain a little more weight. But, you know, keep beating and keep lifting. He'll get there.
Yeah, it doesn't
I love that. He might be on the squat rack right now. Like, talk about his mentality there.
Coach Top in here. And yeah, that's something I think about too. Kind of the opposite for Cali kids. You know, when Chris Adamora was being recruited out of LA, I got him on the phone and I told Chris, I said, you know, I went my freshman year, I spent in LA and all the water polo guys were getting all the girls. Like nobody cared about football. He's like, that's why I want to get out of here, man. I'm trying to find a football culture. Yeah. But there is some of that too. Like, you know, the not all the guys need it like they do elsewhere. And, you know, and there's only like five schools in Southern California that even produce real players. They're just like a bug lamp to all the good players. And there's not an overbearing football culture like we do here. It's not even close.
Yeah. But also to be fair, millionaire parents in California, that doesn't mean much. Everybody's house. Like, have you seen that? The houses are like three bedrooms. They're like $8 million.
Yeah.
You'd be a millionaire and still probably not doing that great in California. Yeah,
my best friend's mom and sister just moved in together. They spent $1 million. And I was talking to her on Mother's Day and she goes, yeah, I spent $1 million for a fixer upper.
Dude, it's crazy. Whenever I see that, West Coast is more Olympic sport. That's why Stanford was doing work in the Director's Cup until we showed up.
Yeah, it's just a whole different world out there. Now you will find your pockets of football, you will find your pockets, but there's pockets of everything else too. Soccer's huge, you know. I mean, baseball, of course, but all the other sports, you know, the individual X Games type stuff is big. You know, you go an hour outside of LA and everybody wants to ride motorcycles, you know, dirt bikes.
Telling me dirt bikes are taking our talent too, man. I didn't think we were competing with dirt.
Well, maybe not football talent. They're
hanging out with the metal militia guys.
Yeah, that's they're not far out there. Yeah, I know a couple of guys like that. Their sons are all dirt bikers. They travel the country riding dirt bikes.
Yeah. Yeah, there's more options out there. Do you see that they're trying to bring a baseball team to Austin? I know every 2 years they're trying to bring a pro sport.
A major league team?
Yeah, a major league baseball team. That'd be interesting. You never know. Some guy pitches it every couple of years, and then
I like UT being the focal point of Austin. Hopefully,
1,000%. Especially if Texas baseball continues to be killing it, man. It's like, come watch this baseball, man. You can already see good baseball here. All right, now we go to the wide receiver room. This is important. Ryan Wingo and DeAndre Moore frequently working on route running. I like that for Wingo. Wingo has incredible athleticism. He just needs little things. He needs to be in the right spot, and his release needs to match the route and or DB leverage. There's just little things there in Wingo's game that seem little, but they're actually massive. So to hear that is good.
Yeah. He's got all the ability in the world for a guy that size to run good routes. You know, guys like him often will just try to get away with physicality or speed. I've seen him working on his routes. He can run routes for his size. Yeah, DeAndre Moore, hard worker. DeAndre Moore works on his hands too. It's just, you know, you can't take the jugs machine out on the field. It's a whole different ball game when you got to track it over your shoulder or whatever. But it's good to hear about the younger wide receivers we got on there too. Jamie French. Who was the other one mentioned?
Jamie Michael Terry.
Michael Terry putting in extra work. So that's good. Yeah.
I'm very suspect of jugs machines. I don't know if they actually do anything.
I think the best part of it probably is tucking the ball after you catch it and just building that muscle memory to put the ball away real quick. Yeah, that's what I've been working with my kid is tuck the ball away. You know, he's only playing flag right now, but at some point they're going to be coming for that ball. Yeah, I think that's probably just it's muscle memory thing. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know there's any value catching a 70-mile-per-hour football.
I don't either, especially straight on. There's very little situations where you're going to be over the ball route's literally the only route where that's ever going to occur. But before we keep going, guys, let's hear a word from Andre the Lawyer.
This video is brought to you by Andre the Lawyer. If you're injured, trust the team that secured millions for their clients and helped thousands of Texans with their injury case. Car wrecks, slip and falls, 18-wheeler accidents, on-the-job injuries, and wrongful deaths. Don't let insurance tell you what your claim is worth. Hire Andre the Lawyer to fight for you. Principal office is in Dallas, but they serve Texans throughout the state. So don't wait and call Andre the Lawyer today at 214-444-8808. That's 214-444-8808. The contact information is in the description.
I'm excited to hear that about Michael Terry. He's in that tweener range, right? What is he, a slot? Is he a tight end? He wants to play outside. Yeah. What do you do? But we also know that athletes are the number one category to get drafted to the NFL. So the weirdest part is the Vegas position, where you're like, where do they go? Those guys get drafted at the highest rates. So I'm just fascinated to figure out where Michael Terry figures out his role because he will eventually.
Well, that stat's only going to go higher with, you know, Jermaine Bishop and Jalen Watt. But yeah, Terry, the thing that it concerns me a little bit is in a perfect world, his NFL position might be on defense. So, you know, I don't know that that stat is going to tell us a whole lot for, you know, Terry himself.
Hand-eye coordination, talking about jugs, and then strengthens the hands. It's not a simulation of anything that you're really doing in the game. To me, it feels like work that feels like you're doing something, but you're not. It's not going to translate that crazy.
Not tiring out the quarterback's arm. That's pretty much it.
Well, when they put the jugs like able to punt, that almost seems better. I'd rather just like punt and you go chase it down than the straight on jugs. All right, Eric, you said the magic word here. This is Lance Jackson, who I think is going to be an absolute destroyer as he comes up. So to have that drive on top of it, man, with these measurables, he should be a freaky player.
Yep, and having the older brother ahead of him and the dad was an athlete, those guys tend to know how to grind. And he's doing that. And he's kind of looking and seeing whatever Colin Simmons is doing. Maybe I should go try that too. And Lance Jackson's one of the few people that can probably emulate Colin Simmons and get the same sort of benefits. So not everybody. I can go do what Colin Simmons does too, and it's not going to make a damn difference. But, this is an important question here.
Any glute striation updates?
This goes back to the site before Inside Texas, where it was a joke called Striated Glutes about how – because all the – when I first got into this line of work, it seemed like everybody's updates were the same exact about spring ball. Everybody's running fantastic routes. Everybody looks like $1 million.
Yeah.
It's not actually the case. Some guys do, though. Some guys probably do have striated glutes, but I'm not. Our inside sources aren't that far inside.
Lance Jackson will be a first rounder. I agree with you, Ryan.
We all can agree with that one.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And also, I like to imagine Colin Simmons is doing. He's just running like a fight club for his workouts. I don't imagine Colin Simmons doing anything official. He's just pulling Jeeps with his teeth or something.
Yeah.
Colin, nuts.
My favorite thing about Lance Jackson that I heard this spring is somebody watched him and came away with the impression that he's going to have a pick six at some point. You don't hear that about edges very often.
Yeah.
So that means he's using his eyes and his length. And, of course, he played tight end in high school as well. He would be a fantastic tight end. I loved him at tight end or defensive end. I didn't care where.
Yeah.
But, I can't wait to see Jackson play this year.
Me too. Quick question. How about the right tackle competition? Any of those dudes standing out?
Doesn't really seem like a competition at this point. It sounds like it's going to be Brandon Baker. Okay. I'm just hoping for league average his first year and go from there. I haven't heard anything to be super optimistic or, you know, the only reason I'm down, I guess, is because I haven't heard great things. But he's been pretty good in pass pro. Maybe not going to be a land mover in the run game. But I think, you know, I think league average, I think, will be the target this season. Freeze up on us?
I think he did a little bit.
Blake for us, Homer. Yeah, and then we get asked about left guard a lot. Neto Umeozulu is the other starter. So pretty much the offensive line is set. And then depth, we talked about depth on Friday's episode inside the program. You can see Jaden Chapman play, or Cole Hudson can move to guard if he needs to, and Connor Robertson can come in and play. So offensive line seems pretty much set in stone. I'm still hoping that there is a grad transfer that comes in, but, you know, who knows.
Yeah, I don't know. Let these young guys continue to, I guess, battle line and see how things fall into place. I know you don't want to leave things up to chance on the offensive line. Like, you want a consistent body you can count on up front, but I'm excited to see what the young guys can do. Right, just give them an opportunity. I know it's a lot going against Ohio State Week One, but I don't know. I just gotta believe in Coach Plug.
You know, the good thing about Ohio State in Week One is they lost a whole lot of their defensive line. They did,
right?
So they're going to get broken in. I mean, right now they're going against Hero Canoe, who was going to play a major role for Ohio State. So they're getting some insight on what they're up against. Yeah, I like this one from Ryan Nelson. If Shamar Stewart can be a first rounder, then I have lots of confidence in Lance. And yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Lance is going to be a whole lot more productive in college than I think Shamar was.
His entire career, I think his last freshman year may be better than Shamar Stewart's entire career stat wise.
It's funny, A&M hit on all those guys. They just went to other schools. You know, now LT Overton is going to be the next first rounder, and he was in that same class.
Oh, wow.
What's up, guys? Good morning. got the reliever arm, coming out of the bullpen real quick. Let me see if I can pull up the where y'all left off. Who was the last name that y'all?
We had Lance. We were talking about Lance Jackson on the team on the hardest workers, and then the last one was you don't have to even bring that up because the last one was Colin Simmons. In fact, we were talking about how Lance Jackson kind of emulates what he does. We've heard that, other guys do that with Anthony Hill, linebacker. But what Simmons does well is he focuses on his body, making sure his body's in perfect peak order. He knows it's a machine that's going to make him a lot of money one day, or make him a lot of money right now. And so I was happy to hear Colin Simmons mentioned in there. I was a bit surprised, but that's the angle that the source took on him. He's very serious about making sure his body's in perfect working order.
Was there a position – I mean, I know you posted this the other day. Was there a position that didn't have somebody listed in here? It feels like every position is obviously
I didn't hear about tight end, which makes sense. They're all pretty young there. Probably hear about them in a year. Now, Nick Townsend's going to come in and work his tail off, but he wasn't in the program. Nick is a very hard worker, very football-focused guy. We heard a lot about Emory Winston throughout the spring, but not necessarily for this article. And we've been hearing about him since the end of spring too. People keep bringing him up, so they're very excited about him. But didn't hear anything about tight ends as far as hardest worker, safety. We got, of course, pretty much every other position then, right? No, maybe D tackle. We didn't have a D tackle.
And like you mentioned, because you haven't heard from those guys. Those were the two biggest positions where Texas went to the portal, least as far as need, and obviously with numbers and. I guess, Charlie, you would hope that and you would expect that guys who've played a lot of college football are going to be able to come in, adjust to Texas, but at the same time, because they know about college football and how it works, be able to fill in and show younger guys how it goes.
Yeah, most definitely. Even Eric wrote about it early in the spring. Like, we were hearing about a motor and big Travis Shaw. Like, that's encouraging, right? When it matters, they're in pads, they're moving around, they're showing their work ethic. So, I mean, I know the guys, they're going to put in – the work in the weight room and all this stuff outside the field, but it was very encouraging during spring to hear the big guys moving around, showing the motor and getting after it. So that's what really matters to me.
Always fun to what does Paul always say? If your best players have to be your leaders, that's what you're looking for. So it looks like they got a lot of options here. Anything else to hit from this before move on to the next topic?
No, that's a good point. A lot of the best players are noted for their work ethic, Arch, Taff, Anthony Hill, Colin Simmons, all those guys Gandy mentioned is very, very good. Malik Muhammad is another one. Here's a good question here. They look okay. Again, I'm not going to get super excited. The question here for those on podcast, any updates about the DTs? How are they looking? Sorry if you already talked about this. Right now I think the starting two would be Brevard and January. And January was the most talented guy they had in the spring out of all of them. They brought in guys that are more experienced, maybe better at the point of attack, but overall raw talent, January was the most talented guy in the room, at least by the looks of it. But now they brought in other guys too, two others. Marad Watson is probably just as talented as January. There's a decent chance he'll start as well. Now, what we like about the DT is we like him as a group more so than maybe any of the single individual parts. The ability to rotate, to go to a three deep, like they worked to perfection in 2022, I think is something we're going to see again. Just keep throwing waves of guys at the problem. And over time, I think they're going to find the right combinations. There's got a lot of different combinations they can try. You're going to want a penetrator out there with another guy that's going to control gaps. I'm optimistic about the D tackles, actually, especially after this last portal window.
I always feel like Texas is going to find D tackles. I know we just kind of expect at this point, like, just go get one. Well, they have to jump in there. But the thing that has me optimistic a little bit more about this crew is that they got multi-year guys. They've been going just kind of one-year rentals for the most part over the past few years. But the fact that they've just been able to replenish the depth chart, because with guys like Deontre Robinson, you lose that, boom, that's a guy lost from the depth chart. You backfill with LaVon Johnson, guys that you've lost. Jare Bledsoe, I know he was a year prior, but still, that's another number that you lose. Just the fact that they've finally reset the roster to where, you know, you have that 2025 class with Sharma, with Terry, with Charles, and now you can go probably not have to oversign at that position, reach at that position. I think that's just as important, maybe not for this year, but just going forward, especially with quality guys like Johnson, even, you know, like Watson, who we kind of think Charlie may end up being a instant impact player.
I think so, definitely. I think he's here for 2 years, right? He'll be a sophomore next year. So that's another guy I think will be a high NFL draft, or has a chance to be a high NFL draft pick. But like you said, with the numbers, it just makes sense the way they're recruiting, right? You got two older guys in Sean Brevard who can kind of build that gap, bridge that gap between the older guys and younger guys. But we have so much depth at the in the youth, man, that I think they're just building it the right way in that room.
It's an interesting comment over from Brian Hudson. Speaking of defensive tackles, what's up, Homer? Talk to Taking a back. Former defensive tackle walk-on. He said January is close to putting it all together. Has the physical tools, just has to get the mental and technical down. And, Charlie, that's one of those things you think when you're playing defensive tackle, it's just like, okay, go, you know, hit man, be strong. It is a far more technical position that I think people want to give it credit for.
Yeah. And then I want to say in February, I got a chance to catch up, you know, Baron Sorrell, Alfred Collins. That's who they mentioned. It was the guy in the room that was next. They mentioned Alex January as being that guy. He was doing a lot of great things that they were already doing, right? And so they said he's the next guy. Like I said, he's young, right? So, you know, maturing a little bit on and off the field. Not in a bad way, just like the more football you play, the more reps you take, the better you'll get at it, right? Just learn how to watch film, take care of your body, things like that. So to hear that from guys that just got drafted say, hey, he's just as good as us, he's the next one up, gives a vote of confidence for me in what Alex January can actually be.
Got to play a lot of different techniques too. You can't just walk in and be like, I'm a nose. Like you gotta play up and down the line to be on this defensive line. So a lot of promise. Homer, you want to take it back over?
Joe, you're doing a great job, man. I just like to sit here. But I appreciate you, man.
Well, I'm then, what is it, 3-ounce specialist, something like that?
Yeah, I was going to say, dude, sixth man of the year, dude. If my Wi-Fi freaks out again, be hanging near. But thank you, man.
You got my number, so see you guys. All
right. Thank you, Joe. Another clutch performance by Joe Cook. All right, guys. I want to talk about the NIL event. I think that was pretty cool. So who was all performing?
This year they had Parker McCollum, Leonard Skinner, what remains of Leonard Skinner anyways, and Leon Bridges. Yeah, if you're after this video, go to YouTube. We're on YouTube. Stay on YouTube. Leon Bridges' Texas Sun song jams, one of my favorite summer songs. It was a good event. They raised – I wasn't given the dollar amount. It had to be, I would guess, $8-10 million probably. One package was traveling with the team for Ohio State, Georgia, and Florida to go to those three games. And that went for $1 million alone. So there was a – and there was two other offerings that went for over $1 million. So, yeah, it was, overall, it was a good day.
If you can afford $1 million to go with the team, you can also afford the private jet to just go on your own, man.
Yeah.
Impressive stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, Texas, you know, and this is why everybody doesn't like the new era, because it's too fair to Texas. There are guys that have money crawling out of their ears that you never even hear about. You know, we hear about like the same 6-7 donors, it seems like. They're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Well, and beyond just the money guys, former alums, business leaders, that kind of stuff, we're also bringing in some of the new media elite. It's hard to see here because I can't zoom in all the way, but this little guy right here, this is Joe Rogan in the center, surrounded by what looks like the offensive line.
Yeah.
But you can see behind them the stage and the setup, right? You can also see that they're offering the Lone Star luxury package there. So that's where they're kind of throwing stuff up, and I guess people are bidding. But you're also getting some famous people. And Joe Rogan is not particularly a football fan. He's a fight fan. So it's just interesting that guys that aren't even, you know, long football fans or Longhorn fans are also showing up to these events. It's showing that, like, you know, the elite guys in Austin are kind of hanging out in the same club right now, and that club seems to show up for the Longhorns.
Yeah. Like, if you're, you know, if you're in New York and you're not a baseball fan, but you're a heavy hitter, you're probably going to know a couple Yankees. It's, you know, Austin, the UT is kind of the center of Austin. So if you're anyone in that town, you're going to somehow find your way somewhere in that, at least tangential to that circle. That was funny. Somebody posted that right after I relayed a story about me and my buddies running into Rogan on Sunset Boulevard in, you know, early 2000s. And my buddy going, dude, you're short. And then he pokes him in the chest. He goes, you're built, though. Rogie kind of laughed it off. So my buddy's delivery wasn't mean-spirited or anything. He was like legitimately shocked at how short Joe Rogan was. But that picture kind of shows it. Even, you know, you could tell that that's not a six-foot man standing next to six-foot-five men.
We've seen it. Like Shane Gillis was at a fundraiser. Not this. I don't know about this one. But in the past, we're seeing that kind of, you know, everybody that moved to Austin in the podcast world.
I think Shane Gillis was at the one last year. He's definitely on campus quite a bit. And then, yeah, you know, you gotta build out the bullpen a little bit more than McConaughey.
Yeah, but you remember the Georgia game, right? Like Kirby, of course, punked us on it. He's like, we're not about that Hollywood, whatever. But they were just going pre-game and being like, hey, this famous person's here. It's becoming a cool hangout spot, even if you're not actually super up on college football. And that's cool, man. It's good for recruiting too, right?
Yeah, it's just a sign of what, you know, what Austin, what Texas means to the area. You know, it is the center of the universe.
Yep, and that's why no pro sports.
Yeah, right. I know we talked about it kind of like last year. Kind of got that USC feel where celebrities on the sideline, right? Like kind of bringing that culture. It's okay to be here. You can be a celebrity, be on the sidelines. They should have donated and run out the tunnel with the team, man. I don't know if they did or not, but I bet somebody would have paid for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd pay to see some of those guys running too. Yeah.
Those events are cool, man, and I'm glad that we're having success with them. They're important. Yeah. And all you got to do is throw up a stage, get some good singers, man, and you can make, what, $8 to $10 million? It's not a bad day.
Yeah.
Not a bad day. Guess what, y'all? Academy Sports and Outdoors is your new home for Jordan. Gear up today and take flight. On the court, off the court, and above the court. Unleash your greatness with head-to-toe Jordan gear for the entire family. Available in-store and at academy.com. Elevated styles and shoes for everyone. Unstoppable value every day. Plus, Academy offers easy ways to shop and save time, like free one-hour in-store or curbside pickup on academy.com orders. Or choose same-day delivery powered by DoorDash. Order by 4 p.m. and you can get it to your home by 8 p.m. Check out Academy's full Jordan selection today at Academy Sports and Outdoors. All right. NIL went well. Something that's also been fun this past week has been our recruiting. But first, I want to talk about the Southeast, right? It's where some interesting players keep showing up from. Now, this article wasn't really doesn't seem like we're getting everybody in the Southeast from this article, but I do want to do an update on the Southeastern guys that we're in the mix for. Let me pull it up here for you.
Yeah, well, I liked it. You know, Texas, this source is still shortchanging Texas in the Southeast, and to me, that's good. Texas likes to kind of sneak up from behind. They'd rather hunt than be the hunted. They don't care about, you know, they don't, that's why they don't want a ton of commits early on. That puts a target on your back. And on the flip side of it, they don't care when a kid is committed because that helps them refine their pitch. I've had a countless flips in their time. You got a guy like Aaron Gregory, been committed to A&M for a long time. The Texas is like, okay, that's fine. Now we know we're up against A&M. And so that, you know, they're fine with that. This source is sleeping on Texas a little bit. And it's not that he's negative. This is what he's hearing right now. There's kids on this list that don't know they're going to end up going to Texas. You know, that's kind of just the fact.
Yeah. And we've seen it, but you're right, man. I've never seen a staff that cares less about somebody committing somewhere. And they're like, well, yeah, we'll see you in December, dude.
Yeah, cool story.
Yeah, exactly. And like Eric said, now you've put – whenever they commit, it's like, okay, here's our Oregon pitch. Here's our A&M pitch. Like, that makes it even more clear when you're not fighting 10 ghost schools.
Correct. Yeah, they're all about that. And, you know, I said at the bottom, I think I said that, you know, I was happy that this guy's kind of shortchanging Texas. You know, sneak up on them. And
so I like the Vodney Cleveland.
Yeah, that one was that. So when we deer hear Texas, you know that's really encouraging, right? So right. You can increase it even more.
Yeah.
That one was encouraging. The Gregory one was pretty encouraging. LSU is after Gregory as well. He's committed to A&M, of course. Vodney Cleveland is way up the Texas big board. So keep that one in mind. We're not – you got to figure out what's going on with Bryce Perry, right? I don't know. It doesn't seem like – it seems like Texas lost a little bit of juice in that area when they lost to Shard Choice. If that could be part of it, we're not sure. He was a really good volume recruiter. But they're going to get – how many guys did they have from the Southeast last year? I mean, it's like 7 or 8, right? I mean, they're probably going to end up in that same area again. The other day I wrote the Texas Big Board, and it was astonishing how many of the targets were out of state compared to in-state.
Buford, Georgia. Well, he can't go to Georgia then if he's from Buford. So maybe we can get him there, man.
No.
Kirby Smart's in-state is super weird. The dynamics there, man.
Georgia has a whole lot of move-ins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, Georgia's a fantastic opportunity for anybody in any state. And so they'll kind of get who they want. But there's a lot of kids that are not – they're indifferent. It's kind of like when Texas has a move-in. You get excited that he moved in. And you're like, I don't care. I didn't grow up here about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A player that's just a lot of fun. I don't know about recruiting-wise, but if you have not watched Kent's tape, just go watch it. It's an absolute blast. This dude's playing in the slot. He's playing out wide. He's playing quarterback. I mean, it's just one of the most fun tapes you can watch on Huddle.
Somebody on Twitter made a good one. They called him Tony Hills. Remember, Tony Hills was a very, very highly rated tight end coming out, and he got hurt and put on some weight, ended up being an NFL tackle.
Yeah.
I'm kind of wondering about Kent's path here. It could be offensive line eventually.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. He's got to drop some weight. But to be that athletic too for that size is just bonkers, man. So yeah, he's super fun player to keep an eye on.
Jason's all over him.
Hey, Jason Peters made a lot of money playing left tackle a long time, being a former tight end. It's okay.
Yep.
Trey Quinn, we talked about him Friday, I think, on Recruiting Scoop. Not super big yet, but shifty player. So there's some fun names here, man. If you're into the Southeastern recruiting, which you should be, because it's an incredible part of the country for football players.
Southeast recruiting is Texas recruiting now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we're truly national. It doesn't feel like you get one or two guys. It feels like Florida's fair game, California's fair game, Atlanta's fair game.
Louisiana just got a kid from Louisiana 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
How does Sark balance that, right? Because there's like in previous staffs, there's pushbacks if you're not taking a ton of Texas kids. Is Sark just well liked and doesn't even have to, or is that just an overblown thing?
Well, he does. They do a lot of smart things. Their outreach to Texas high schools is probably greater behind the scenes than people realize. Yeah. You know, they have like these online clinics that the high school coaches go on, and you know, Kyle Flood might shoot the shit with them for an hour. And so they do a lot of really smart things like that, but they're going to do whatever's best for the program. And, you'll know a year ahead of time whether or not you have to go hard out of state. Like they knew in the 2025 class that they were going to pound Houston because Houston had ballers in that class, in that cycle. And then a year later, not so much. And the state is down. And, well in advance, you got to start looking elsewhere. If a player's even, they're going to take the kid in Texas. But when it's not even, they're not going to think twice about going out of state. They're not going to drop their standards just to appeal to Texas high school football coaches or whatever. They've got the right approach here. And this class is down in state. I'm sitting here wondering if Trey Owens is going to be the last Texas quarterback Sark takes. You know, I just haven't seen a quarterback that's really blown me away in state. But, he's just going to keep going where they're at. And the better Texas is, the more the profile raises, the stronger NIL is. They're going to get pretty much whoever they want. You can almost put an autopilot top three class on right now.
Yeah, look, I was there in a short amount of time. Coach Baker, Coach Allen Clark, Coach Orfe, they've done a great job. When they come to the DFW area, visiting schools, they already got buy-in for some of these coaches. And it's not about the 26 class; it's about that 27, 28. They're getting buy-in. They're building relationships. So do what you got to do to win. Go out and find the best players, right? If you feel like that's out of state, you got to do what you got to do to win a championship, right? No. But 27, 28, they're already building that pipeline. These coaches are already trusting they got buy-in and gaining. So they're doing a great job in the state of Texas. No matter what people might say, they have a great relationship with a lot of these high school coaches around here.
Yeah, that seems like the key. But it was always just a thing. If you're not taking Texas kids, they get mad at you. It's like, well, if you're icing them out and not giving them the time of day and then not taking Texas kids, sure. But if you're still staying connected and respectful, it seems like you're not going to deal with that as much.
They also have the great – Sark put together a fantastic staff to recruit the entire country. You know, a couple of those guys are gone, but Terry Joseph did masterful work in Louisiana. Jeff Banks, of course, is a Cali guy. The way he put together that first staff is still benefiting the program now. They really do have connections all over.
Yeah. With Texas recruiting Kent as a tight end, do they not feel as confident with Bowman out of modern day?
Well, those two aren't tied. They want both of those guys, but they are feeling less confident on Bowman. Bowman, Georgia has done a really good job giving him the Brock Bowers blueprint, and right now Texas has to fight. And Texas has to fight very hard because that kid, you know, he initially said he was going to wait till December, which, you know, I was all in favor of that. Now, you know, he might decide this summer. So Texas is going to have to crush that official visit. That kid is special. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about this though. How much better is he than Nick Townsend? You know, I'm not I'm of course. I'm not sure the difference is all that much. They do need more tight ends. It's a two tight end class. You can see that Jeff Banks, if you follow, you know, on Twitter, he's been making the rounds. But those guys are independent of each other. They want Kent no matter what. They want Mark Bowman no matter what.
Every player with Eric is on the Nick Townsend scale. It doesn't matter if it's defensive tack. Is this player better or worse than Nick Townsend?
Well, yeah, you can throw a Lance Jackson scale in there too.
Dude, Eric's going to be at Nick's draft party. in 3 years, dude.
I just love that kid, man.
Dude, he's gonna be an absolute baller, man.
Yeah,
and the fans are already on it too, man. I hear a lot of like Nick Townsend hype, so the fan base is ready for it too, which is good.
I speak to a group of Houston fans every first Thursday of every month, and Nick Townsend showed up to one of them just so he can meet some Texas people and kind of network and meet and
how smart.
Not really work necessarily, but just kind of go in, introduce himself, say he can't wait to be a Longhorn, and be like, okay, this is kind of second order thinking here. This guy really gets it.
This guy's on the Jahdae Barron plan for success.
I am definitely a Nick Townsend homer.
Yeah, it's hard not to be, man. He's going to be a fun player. And then, also, good job on the board freaking everybody out. What'd you say? He's like, no, he's headed to Georgia. Nobody yeah, that was funny. Sarcasm. That was making me laugh, dude. Everyone just immediately, what? Huh? Yeah. All right. I also just want to go look through the 2026 that we have going so far because we had a couple of new commits. And then we'll just kind of talk about where we're thinking this class is going to end up and what we like here. There's a lot of good floor setting here. And then also you got Dia at the top, Jermaine Bishop. So you have some big, big talent committed too. Start at the bottom here. Guys, give me about a 10-minute detailed analysis on our long snapper. Who has like an incredible name? What is it, Trot O'Neal? Dude,
yeah,
he's gonna play 40 years.
Yeah, Preston Wood. They used to put out kids, man. We're having all like, they used to. They must have lost some coaches or something. They used to have guys. Didn't Michael Irvin too go there? Or,
you're right. He did go there.
My boy Christian Morgan, tight end, way back in the day. Oh man, I used to spend a lot of time in that area on the recruiting trail, and you know we're not there nearly as much, but. Yeah, got to have a long snapper, man. They're gonna take a punter and a kicker too. So it's gonna be special teams heavy class.
Also, 6'2", 235. I mean, he can play linebacker too.
Well, I'm calling. He's an athlete. He said
he's versatile. But that's hey, man. We're joking, but you need long snappers, man. Mm-hmm. The only time you realize how important they are is whenever you don't have a long snapper.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yaheem Riley, man, following the path of Makuba. I saw Makuba also shout him out. That's got to be cool for Riley, man. So what's latest there? He was our last recruit.
Hey, man, I love this kid. I think the ceiling's super high for him. I think he can play multiple positions, just like a lot of DBs in his class. He can play safety. He can play nickel. He has some coverage ability, but, man, he'll come down and smack you, right? I know he's not the biggest kid weight-wise, but if you go look at his film, man, he lays a punch when he hits you. So I think you just got another tough kid out of Central Texas, man, who I think could come in ahead of a lot of people from a technique standpoint because he understands he has, like you said, the same trainer as Makuba and Taft and Barron. So I think he'll come in ready, but I think he just need to gain some weight. But other than that, I love this kid, man. I love his versatility.
Yep, Charlie nailed it. This is what I think of with a Kena guy, versatility. You like to deploy that sort of a four corners mindset where every guy had some sort of corner ability. I think Riley's got that side of he's definitely on the safety side. He's got the corner sort of cover ability. And then, you know, the safety toughness, the safety head. But, yeah, versatility, he's a really good player. I, you know, when I heard he was a U of H commit, the first time we started paying attention to him, I'm like, all right, well, you know, Willie Fritz can identify people. So let's take a look at the tape. And I was like, oh, damn. This guy should be, he should be committed. He should be committed to TCU. You know, it never should have been U of H as his top option, I don't think. No offense to U of H, but he and Riley's too good to go there.
Yeah, and it's just exciting, man. It seems like the Austin kids are rejuvenated, right? Like, you always had the kids that were going to go to Texas because they grew up there, but now it seems like the kids are, like, really jazzed about being back, staying home. Nicholas Robertson, interior offensive line. This one that kind of went through the cracks, oddly, and Eric has just stated, like, hey, man, this was an important pickup.
Yeah, they want to get more punch at the point of attack, and you know the best way to do that is take guys like Robertson here. He doesn't lumber. He's not a big guy that just, you know, he doesn't have heavy feet for his size and body type. At the Under Armour camp in Houston, I went and just watching him run. It was a prettier run than most of the left tackles, the guys that are going to be left tackles in college. And he's a guard that's, you know, 340 pounds or whatever. Had good quickness numbers. He plays tackle in high school. You think he's going to be okay in pass pro in college, but his bread and butter should be, you know, like what we're going to see with DJ Campbell this year. I'm thinking gap schemes and just being able to get displacement at the point of attack.
Yeah, I love Big Nick, man. I think one of the most underrated guys I want to say in the class and probably in the nation, people just don't realize how good he is, right? And the kind of conditioning for a big guy, he has great condition. They run a lot of no huddle. If you go back and look at his film, he was getting back to the line scrimmage, lined up, ready to go for the next play. That's what I loved about him because he got a work ethic already.
Yeah, he. I was at a camp 2 years ago, and I had no idea who he was. You know, I had to ask somebody. I'm like, "Who the hell is that kid?" And it was Nick. And I've kind of been paying attention to him ever since. So he's, when you see him in person, like this is a couple times I'm at a camp where there's, you know, 100 other offensive linemen, and he's the guy standing out to me. So that, you know, that tells you a lot.
Right. And then we have the most tongue twister name for me that I always say backwards, but it's Hayward Howard, not Howard Hayward. And he committed recently too, man. And this is a Louisiana kid, man. He's got the accent. He's got everything, man. Excited to have him. This is gonna be cool.
Yeah, his name is backwards. It throws me off every time too. But yeah. I have to remember, I was born in Hayward and lived the first 2 years of my life in Hayward, California. So just every time I think about that, long kid. Obviously, Orphy has a type at corner. He wants length, and also there's some versatility here too. He might end up at star. You know, they say that this kid's got a really good football mindset. You know, a grinder like some of those other guys that they got from Louisiana. You know, Derek Williams comes to mind. So
yeah,
they like the profile here. And it was a very smooth baton pass from Terry Joseph to Mark Orphy. Much more seamless than what we saw with Bo Davis to Kenny Baker.
Yeah, and there's a difference, right? Whenever you go pro, it's they're not leaving because they're disgruntled. They're leaving because it's a better opportunity, so that can help the baton pass.
Yeah, they're not taking their big board with them because they don't have to recruit anymore. You know, now Terry Joseph is sitting here thinking, hey, you know, I want this kid going to Texas so I can draft him in 3 years.
Yeah, exactly, because I'm going to have all the inside track on the kid's personality, and yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Joseph's going to be able to draft well out of Texas, that's for sure.
Yeah, buddy.
Max Wright, man. Shout out. He's been in this class 7 years, I think, now. Feels like it. But another Melissa kid.
Yeah, worked out with Guzman, right?
Yeah.
I like it when they jump in the class and then you never hear another peep out of him.
Exactly.
Like Lance Jackson, you know, that people were trying to fabricate Lance Jackson's going to LSU. He's going to go watch his brother play. Just settle the hell down, right? You know? Yeah, when they jump in, they don't make another sound. You're like, oh yeah, they signed. Okay, good. That's how it's supposed to go. That's the plan. I love the kid at the take, and this ties into Robertson too. Is where these guys are not going to kill the budget, and they're not going to scare away anybody. No offense. I think Max Wright is a fine player, and they don't take anybody that they don't think has the bend and the flexibility and the overall upside to be in the NFL. So they think Max Wright could be an NFL player. But you know, it's not going to scare off Turntine or Ojo. Not that I'm sure that those guys would be, but it's, you know, you don't have to worry about that. There's no friction there. But he's going to come in, and his first couple of years are going to go exactly how his recruitment, and we're not going to hear a peep out of him. And then in year three, we're going to start, hey, what's going on with Max Wright? Oh yeah, he's looking good. He might start in a year or two. You know, I mean, that's how it's going to go for this guy. I'm a big fan of his. tackle all the way. You know, people start talking about guard. I don't see guard with him at all. I think he's got what it takes to play right tackle probably.
Yeah.
Well, is he a true 6'8"?
I think he's like 6'6.5". You know, yeah. I have a
6'8" guard is ridiculous. You would be long at tackle.
I don't think he's that tall, but I haven't. Yeah, I haven't stood next to him. Yeah, he's a tackle. He's going to be, you know, he's first tackle in the class. But by the time it's all said and done, if they get Turntime and Ojo, then you know, third tackle. He's tackle all the way and a developmental guy. He's going to take a little bit of time, but he's also not super raw either.
Dude, Turntime and Ojo, man. Ooh, boy. Yeah, if you can land those guys, man. Yeah. Bishop, Lott, Turntime, Ojo. Man, if you land
They're getting one of Ojo and Turntime. I'm with Charlie, and I think they've got a good chance to get them both, but they're
I think Turntime grew another inch on me, man. I saw him the other day. I went after North Crowley. The day Jermaine Bishop committed, I saw Turntime. I was like, man, I think you've gotten grew an inch on me, man. So, yeah, we'll see.
He's gotten a little taller?
Yeah, he looks like he's grown a little bit. And okay. Cut his hair. I was like, okay, so it's not the afro. Like, I think you actually have grown a little bit.
Okay, nice. Yeah. So that, you know, he's probably a solid 6'4", right? You're thinking he might get
I'll give him 6'4".
Okay, yeah.
Man.
What is everyone's fascination with changing tackles to guards? It's almost kind of like, well, sometimes it's a real eval, but it also feels like an evaluator hipster take, like the fine wines of like, yeah, but I think he's actually more of a guard. Like, I think sometimes people just say it to act like, look, I evaluate guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to account for that ability in case tackle doesn't work out for some reason. Like, obviously, when you see Zayden Crimpin, which I think he's a tackle, but you like the guard versatility because that raises the player's floor.
1,000%.
Yeah, so you know you want to account for it. But a guy like Crimpin, who I hope that dude's in the class, he's got the arm length for tackle, he's got the movement skills for tackle. Let's just not overthink it. But if you get Ojo and Turntime and, you know, 3 years down the road, Crimpin wants to get on the field and it's guard or, hell, maybe even center, who knows, you're going to play.
That is the reality why you do a guard eval, especially in this Texas context, because we're taking five-star tackles. So if you're not in that five-star kind of area, you might end up in a better situation playing those guards or centers.
Right. And you don't want to take a lot of pure guards. You know, obviously – right. Robertson is a pure 100% guard. But if you miss on a guard, they don't have any, there's nowhere else to do with them unless they can somehow play center. But if they can't play guard, they probably can't play center.
So
you're not going to see a lot of pure guard takes, like where, you know, DJ Campbell was a pure guard take. He was a five star. Cole Hudson was kind of a tweener, but they always knew that center could be a possibility for him as well. So you're just not going to see – Nick Robertson is a bit of a rarity in that you look at the guy and you go, all right, that's 100% guard, and that's pretty much it. But then you have to go, okay, well, what's his floor? I mean, what's the likelihood he's going to make it? And he's got a pretty damn high floor.
That's a good point. There is nowhere to go if they don't meet that eval. So you want somebody with the ability to flex out. Okay. Chris Stewart, next up.
Been committed since June of last year, man. You know, ever seems like everybody's keep trying to maybe push him out. He's not going to be in the class. He's going to be in the class. Like, and then he puts something out on Twitter. Like, yo, I'm here. Like, I ain't went anywhere, right? Like, don't forget about me. I love Chris Stewart's game, man. I think he's shown that he's one of the top receivers, especially at OT7. He was out there giving guys absolute business, right? And so I think highly of Chris Stewart, man. I think he can be a ball player, man. I love his game.
You know, Texas was his first offer. I think people forget that. That'll tell you a lot about what Texas thought. And, you know, that's a Sark offer. It doesn't matter who the wide receiver coach is. Sark's going to sign off on that. I love his play speed. I love his mindset. I love his versatility, too. I think he can play inside or outside. You know, probably a slot at Texas, I would think. But can play any punt returner. I liken his game to Steve Smith from USC back in the day. That one might be
okay.
Some of the people here.
I like that.
But just a well-rounded wide receiver that could do a little bit of everything good. Now, is he, you know, is he special? You know, maybe not. But can he get you 50 catches a year? I think that's very likely.
That's special to me. If you can get 50 catches a year.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You got to become the starter. If you become the starter.
Yeah, you'll get it.
Yeah, you're going to get it. Now, it's tough to become a starter at Texas, but once you do, you're going to the NFL. Dude.
Yeah, it is tough. Solid to Texas. Any updates there?
He's solid as long as Texas is solid to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he committed. Texas was always a school. Texas was always a school. No questions about it. That's where he wants to be. But he has to be wanted as well. And, you know, modern recruiting can be a little up and down. People are always, you know, checking their options. But, yeah, Texas likes him. He likes Texas a lot. And, you know, right now he's committed. I hope it stays that way. He's a good player.
And also the other schools are aware of dynamics too, right? That's when they start popping up. Hey, man.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's got a lot of schools are in his ear. You know, they're going to go, you know, going to go get whatever. They'll, you know. And, you know, they should do that. And he needs, and he should go where he's wanted, because when you are wanted, that means that school has a plan for you.
Right.
You should go where you're wanted. Maybe not wanted the most, or you're not the biggest need, because, you know, bad teams need good players. But he has to go to a place that has a plan for him. And, you know, I hope it's Texas. Go. Anybody that questions him, just, I don't think they've watched his tape. His tape is damn good. And he had a really good 7-on-7 circuit, as Charlie said.
Jermaine Bishop, baby, big pickup. I had people in a couple group chats that are not associated with Texas being like, damn, y'all got Bishop. Because I know everybody else in the state was wanting him, man. So good pickup when all the other group chats are mad that we were able to land him, right?
I want Charlie to go see if he calls him Michael again.
No, I was actually going to say Jermaine this time. But, man, look, I love this kid. I'm Batman, whatever you want to call him, man. Anybody can go out there and shut somebody down wearing a cape and a mask, like some of the top athletes in the country. And no, Jermaine's an absolute stud, man. I think this guy, the sky's the limit. He's a guy that's going to be on draft boards after, I say, his first year at Texas. Like, he had that type of ability, right? Wherever they put him, you want to put him in slot, you want to put him outside, you want him to travel and go cover the best receiver. Like, I feel like he can do that. This is like, I won't call him generational player. I know I might get my hand tapped saying Travis Hunter, so I won't say it. But man, to me, he has that type of ability to where he can just take away his side of the field. If you put him on offense, he'll go score a touchdown too. Like, he's just a phenomenal player, man. I love Bishop.
Yeah, he moves different. My boy Horn17 on IT mentioned Jalen Waddle, and you know, I could see some of that. Waddle, I had people laughing at me when I said he's the best player in the state. You can't have a small wide receiver as best player in the state, man. Go to 7-on-7, and if you can't touch a guy in 7-on-7, you are not going to be able to tackle him in real football. And that's how it played out for Waddle. I think this guy is very similar athletically. There was a time when people wondered what side of the ball Waddle would play, just because he's so dynamic. I think Bishop. I think that's a pretty good comparison. Now, I would probably want Jalen Waddle on offense though. So, yeah, I'm kind of curious to see how this all plays out, but. You know, if they get Jalen Lott, I tend to think Jalen Lott should play defense and Bishop should play offense. I'm not going to question what the staff does, obviously, but that's just my – I would try both at both probably and just see what sticks.
Hey, he said Travis Hunter, man. Let him play both sides of the ball. I'm sure the receivers will love that situation. I'm sure the DBs will love that. But let him play both, man. Let him play quarterback too.
Everybody talks about that one of his first clips where he hurdles the guy and then gets right back in gear. Like, he puts it in second gear right away. It's like, who else can do that in the nation?
I put that play on Twitter. That blew me away. He's hurdling a guy, and then he just changes direction. It's like he changed direction in midair and then cuts and goes on the land on one foot. Like, what? I've never seen that before.
Yeah, that was a huge pickup. And you can tell by how other fan bases felt. And then this was an incredible grab. Diabel, and me and Ian watched his full huddle last Wednesday and broke down what we were seeing, and we were just more and more excited. He's another player like that, man. He can move. He's a pocket passer first, but he's got a lot of arch, like similarities in the game there and how they play. But man, we say arch drops bombs to Diabel, dude. Like, if you see a play action, you need to just turn around and sprint 20 yards because he's going to throw it over your head.
I see a lot of arch there too. Hey, let's holler at my boy Deshae Milburn here. Deshae trains some of the best wide receivers in the state.
Yeah,
if y'all feel Jermaine is Travis Hunter, then go watch Jonah Williams. Deshae is the one that told me that if he played wide receiver, Jonah is like a cross between Evan Stewart and what's the kid, the transfer from A&M to Georgia, Noah.
Oh yeah, not Kane. I don't know why I'm going with that, but I know. Thomas?
Yeah, the tall kid. So he said a cross between Evan Stewart and Jonah Thomas. Like, you know, I would tend to want that guy on offense too.
That's a hell of a combination.
Yeah, it is.
You got a big body possession receiver mixed with Evan Stewart route running and speed. I'll take that.
Nobody, I don't think anybody that's watched Jonah do anything would question any of his ability for sure.
Yeah, shout out Jonah. Good job winning the SEC also. Crazy, man.
Hey, good seeing Deshae pop in. That's my boy.
Yeah, Dia Bell. Yeah, Dia is a huge grab. So this class, man, so we got the floor set down here, and then we got some players up top too, man. So right now on the spot, where's the class rank? And why is it number one?
By the end of the year?
Yeah.
I'd say three. I think Georgia's got to – now, Georgia just lost a top tackle in the country to Miami, so that hurts a little bit. But Georgia just seems like they're in a really good spot. I would go three. But we got to – you know, what are the needs? What are the needs by the end of the cycle?
Right.
The needs were great at a couple positions that kind of demanded that Texas end up number one.
Correct. Right?
So they'll get Justice Terry. And they damn near got Michael Fasusi. So if Texas has some really glaring needs late, they could have another come from behind and do that. Yeah, they could do that again.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's dependent on the positions you have to take, and those certain positions get rated higher, right? There's more five stars because they have more translation to the NFL. So sometimes it's just your holes that also dictate where you're going to end up.
Right. Well, and also the positions you need too, because a lot of positions there's a bias towards them. So they need two offensive tackles in the class, right? Anybody know two highly rated offensive tackles that might raise the class?
Yeah.
You know, they're going to get a wide receiver that's really highly rated, at least one, probably two more. You know, some of those guys are takes on, you got to take them on the economic side of it where it's not super costly because you're going to get a guy that's going to cost a lot. No. You know, if they flip Aaron Gregory, that's not going to be cheap. Demand needs are going to kind of dictate where the class ends up. They've got, you know, second, the number two quarterback ranked. I wouldn't trade him with number one. That's going to help out. That's going to pay off dividends that I don't think we've even seen yet. Later as the cycle really starts heating up. And then, you know, if you go back to that spot we had earlier about Southeast recruiting, they're gonna turn up a lot more when decision time comes for a number of those guys in the Southeast. So I love where they're at right now, but I don't think they're gonna get the number one class again. But last year we kind of were building up to that. We're like, hey guys, they got a lot of needs to meet. I remember I sent Justin to Georgia, and he's like, wow, they're not getting. I said, Justin, look at the class. They have to get somebody really damn good. They have to. We don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be somebody. And, you know, the situation called for going all in. And if they're in that situation again, they could get the number one class. I just don't think that they're going to have to be quite that desperate.
Yeah, that's a good point. Final point. What are y'all's thoughts on the linebacker that recently decommitted from USC?
Xavier Griffin, right?
Well, we're calling him an edge.
Yeah.
And we like where Texas is at on that one. You might even say Texas is the favorite. But see, there's a case that kind of ties into our last conversation. You know, after one class leaves, like all these names just exit my brain. But was Javian Hilson was the edge they were chasing late last cycle?
Yeah, from Florida.
Yeah, okay, so they let him walk because they didn't want to have that money tied up on the bench with Colin playing two more years. Now you have to think, okay, Colin's gone after next year. So you only have this guy tied up on the bench. And he would play, don't get me wrong, but yeah. you wouldn't use him entirely until Colin is gone. And he's still going to have Smith the Robo to compete with too. But so you start thinking a little bit in terms of, okay, they probably do need to start thinking about succession planning for Colin already. Given that he's a three-year player. So there you get, okay, you're like, all right, that makes this guy a bigger need, and now Texas is going to become a player for him. Texas might be the favorite for him as of right now.
Yeah. You got a long-standing relationship with Coach Lyle and Clark that goes back when he was at Ohio State, man, and it's steady building, right? They're already talking to him about the role they see him in, right? He's paying attention. He's listening. So I think that's huge.
And every class has its own narratives, and one that's kind of building right now is Lyle and Clark's impact on it. You know, Jerelyn McCoy, he's about to get a super hard push from Florida, but Texas has made up a lot of ground with Clark right there. And, you know, even if he does commit to Florida, Texas will stay in on that one. But Lee Allen Clark is doing a lot of good work right now. And it's kind of like the perfect situation. You got PK able to focus on what he does great, and you got Lee Allen Clark able to go out, build relationships, and make a name for himself.
Also, USC, reevaluate your commit plans. Quit doing this.
That was my joke. It's like these kids in the Southeast are thinking, where can I get a bag?
Yeah.
Not actually alienate. I can buy the price, but not actually alienate relationships with people that I might need or at a school I might actually attend. So they're getting played.
Yeah. USC is doing, quit doing this, guys. Just advice. It looks good for 2 weeks. But then whenever they leave, it doesn't look good.
That was the theme of last cycle for them, but not only them. Oregon had an issue there too, where, you know,
they would do that.
It's one thing to buy a commitment, it's another thing to buy a signing.
Yeah.
And also as a kid, why wouldn't you do that? I mean, that's just free, that's all upside. So it's like, why wouldn't okay, I'll take some photos in your gear for a couple weeks. All right. The class is looking fun. I'm excited. And it's starting to heat up. And it's only going to heat up more as we get into the summertime, y'all.
Yep.
All right. Had fun. Chat, thank you. Eric, thank you. Coach Dub, thank you as well. And this is IT Live brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Later, y'all.